Have you had trouble at work because of office politics? Office politics can turn a dream job into a nightmare. I'm Gloria Moraga. This is my one-on-one with Edward Jones. Edward is an executive coach, an inspirational speaker, and author of the book, Office Politics, The Right Way, 7 Principles to Create Win-Win Relationships in the Workplace.
This is Gloria Moraga's One-on-One, a show designed to improve face-to-face communication in the digital age.
I began our Zoom conversation by asking him to explain what an executive coach is and what exactly does he do.
Well, what I do is I compare it to therapy, coaching versus consulting. That may be the best way to explain it. And I look at a therapist is looking back through one's life and help them figure out maybe how they got to be where they are with their thought process. A coach looks forward, looks at all the possibilities. I always say that I don't tell people what to think. I make sure that they think. And when I think about the idea of a consultant gets information about an organization, they make recommendations about what a person should do. But a coach helps the person determine what it is they really want. Because a lot of people don't know what they really want. But when you ask them what they really want, then they have to determine how they're going to get there. The reason I prefer to be a coach rather than a consultant, and there's nothing wrong with any approach, they all will get you there. But whenever you are giving people advice, they always give you the yes, but. Would you want to make this change? Yes, but. And they can give you the reasons why they can't do it, whereas a coach looks at how you can do it and helps you process that. There's a gap between people where they want to be and where they are right now. If they could close that gap on their own, they don't need a coach. But if they have that area where they want to be and they still haven't gotten there yet, the coach can help them see the roadblocks that are in their way. The coach, in a way, helps people look at from 30,000 feet. An example, once I was in my office at SIU, and I was on the third floor. I saw these two cars that were backing up in the parking lot. They were ready to hit each other because they couldn't see at that level. But where I was, I could see. And so I yelled out the window and stopped them from running into each other. That's an example of how a coach can work with people. So things you cannot see, the coach can help you see those things.
How important is what you do as we move forward in a new era post COVID-19 and go back to the workplace? How much conflict do you think we're going to see with people being kind of stressed out about the virus, but also about being gone from work for a while?
Well, that's an interesting issue because we're in an unprecedented period right now. And when I look at the coaching that I do, my area is office politics. And when people haven't been working, there probably isn't a lot of office politics. It's a lot of stress about not working. But just like when we were working on this Zoom, getting this together, it's new to us. So we had to figure out new ways of doing that. Do we have to back out, restart, do something different? And it's a real, again, looking at the possibilities. What are the first thing you have to do is what are the options? And when I coach people before I was actually a certified coach, I have this approach that you need to generate all the options. Then you need to evaluate the up and down side of each option. There's never a perfect solution, but when you get the best upside with the least downside, that is your best option. And sometimes there are no good options, but you have to figure out a way to make the best of a bad situation. For example, do you go to work and risk getting sick, or do you not work and not have income? Those are two bad options. But you have to look at what's the best thing I can do in this situation. I've been seeing a lot of people doing a lot of stuff online, figuring how to do things online, how to sell things online. On Channel 10, I think it is, they have deals and steals, people who had a lot of products that they can't sell. So they're able to go on TV, promote those, and get maybe not the best price, but get a good price for them. So that creativity, I think, really does help. But it's always thinking about the possibilities. Every minute you take complaining about something is a moment taking away of trying to solve it.
Talk about office politics and how detrimental office politics is to businesses.
I read an article, it was January 2018, and it said that office politics cost United States companies over $100 billion. And that comes in the form of absenteeism, it could be sabotage, it could be turnover, all those different things affect that. And it obviously affects, you're not as effective as an organization. Your profits will be down because people won't be there to keep things going. And just the stress alone is a health problem. So it's not just financial, it's also physical. And then it bleeds into the family, so it's a ripple effect. So it's a stealth thing. A lot of people don't want to deal with it. The only time they really come to deal with it is when the pain is so great that there's no other way around it. But if they dealt with it earlier, they could probably solve it earlier and reduce that cost, both physical and financial.
What is office politics and how have you worked to solve it?
Well, I can give you two examples, one general one and one that happened to me, because I had a lot of stories I can tell. And one of the reasons that has helped me become an executive coach and helps me help others is the situation that I dealt with and how I overcame them. But in a general rule, there's what I call the meeting after the meeting. I've been in meetings where the boss is talking about an idea, and everybody in the meeting looks like they're agreeing with that idea. But after the meeting, by the water cooler, people are saying how dumb they think the idea is and how it won't work. So my thing of it is what I used to always say with people is that there's an idea out there. It's not a perfect solution, as I mentioned before. I'd rather know the downside in here than find out after the fact. Because if you disagree with in here, it's no problem. We can work through that and work through that situation. I can either move forward with the idea, knowing there's a downside, but at least I'm aware of it. But if you go out there and you don't know it's there and someone else knew that, that's where there's a problem. So that's just kind of a general thing. One that is really specific is we had programs that were at the University of Southern Illinois that were going to the community college. We had a two-year residency requirement for residence hall. And I knew that a lot of the people who were freshman, sophomore, those students would no longer need to live in the residence halls at SIU because they weren't, first of all, they wouldn't be students there, but that would be a good part of our potential population. So I was wanting to house the students from the community college. I initially got approval to do that. I informed the market that we were going to do that. And at the last minute, the rug was pulled out from under me. So it was one of those things that, okay, it's a bad call. Using the athletic example, if you're playing a basketball and it's a bad call, you've got 25 seconds to call the next play. If you spend the time complaining about the bad call, you'll get penalized even further because of delay of game. So we had to look at how do we do this? So I went to my public and I just told them conditions had changed, that we're not going to be able to do this after all. And obviously, so rather than waiting for it to hear from someone else, I went out in front with it and took the heat for it. Now, you can't blame the bosses. That doesn't work out too well in the long run. So you just have to absorb that. But getting out in front of it was the key thing for me and being honest that conditions had changed. And they were beyond our control. and that's all we could do with it. So that when I had to work with my staff, because they were very upset. So we had to calm everybody down, make sure that no one is talking out of school to the press, because everybody's looking for that person who's going to be complaining to the press. And it's like, as a team, this is where we are. It was a bad, the conditions changed. We're going to work with it. We're going to find another way to make this thing work. And that's how you, so as a leader, I had to calm the waters and to look at other options to get to our objective.
Podcasts that I do and the videos I produce for my blog are called One-on-One Communications in the Digital Age.
Right.
Because I think that most of the problems in the world can be solved if we're all better communicators.
Absolutely.
Talk to one another, look each other in the eye, don't appear threatening, give each side a chance to speak. But I know a lot of people don't speak up because they're afraid. Mm-hmm. And so they don't communicate well because the boss sets the tone.
Right.
You're afraid to communicate. Mm-hmm. How do we break through that, or how do we fix that when there's a crummy boss?
That is the crux of what I deal with. Because the initially, when I looked at office politics, people would come to me about having crummy bosses and wanting to know how to deal with it as a way of working with office politics. And so I thought you could work with an individual to help them be able to navigate that. And at best, they'll be just dealing with it or tolerating it. So the idea, I thought that I could help people navigate through polluted water, but if I became, as an executive coach working with leadership teams, I could help purify the water.
Yeah.
And the thing that happens is as a boss, I learned how to be a better boss when I got my first promotion, because I was a good at my entry-level position, and I thought I was the best at that role. So when I supervised people who were in the same role, I thought, this is the way you do it. Well, I had two people who were totally opposite. One person had my leadership style. Another one person was totally, I don't know where they were coming from. So this one person, I thought, this is a great employee. The other one thing, oh my goodness, I don't know what I'm going to do with you. And I decided, let's change my thought process as the boss. Let's look at the end result and don't worry about how the sausage is made. The idea comes is that at the end of this period, this is what I want. Are you willing, able to do that? If you need help, will you ask for it? That was probably the best thing for me. Because the person who had a totally different style, they got it there. I didn't have to see how it worked, but it worked out.
Yeah.
And I thought that is the way to do that. So I learned that lesson myself. So that's why it sticks with me. Uh-huh. When I first went to an organization, everybody was a yes person. I'd sit there, I'd start talking, and I wouldn't get any feedback. And I'd say, this is the idea. And I had actually literally physically say, I'm putting the idea in the middle of the table. When you criticize the idea, you're not criticizing me. So feel free to criticize the idea. And what I would do is, and I started to lay out the situation. Then I would agitate. Say, you are the financial person. The marketing would be this would cost something like that. How does that work for you? And what would be the benefit of what this is happening? So they would look at it from their perspective and say, this is the benefit from this perspective. So we put the ideas out there and we would discuss the ideas and the pros and cons, not who it came from. And we're looking for the best way to get it done. What is the best way to do this? And so when you look at the best way, then you start talking about options and things like that. And so this is the way it works, and that makes sense. Then when people started to repeating themselves, that means there are no new ideas. So at this point, we have our options, and we need to determine the best up and downside of those. Now, the thing with a lot of bosses, just like me, when I moved from my entry-level position to the first-level supervisor, I was good at what I did, but no one taught me how to manage. So a lot of managers are up there. As they say, Michael Jordan was a great basketball player, but a terrible coach.
Right.
Because he was great at what he did, but Steve Kerr was a much better coach because he could see everything, weak strengths, weaknesses, and put it together, whereas Michael just did it. That would be an example of how management works. Management is a totally different skill than whatever your specialty was.
I think that every person who's promoted needs to have management training.
Absolutely. And that's the thing where I come in as an executive coach. And the hard part about that is they don't think they need it. I become the mirror and say, basically, this is what it looks like. Do you like what you see?
Right.
And then they can determine if they want to change it. But at least it's like the ghost of Christmas past. You can see what it looks like. Because when you're doing your thing and you're the hot shot, you got promoted, you know how to get it done, you were good at what you did, now everybody else just needs to get it done too. And you're not listening to those people who have different styles than you have.
Mm-hmm.
If they got the training ahead of time, that would be great. But when I would come in, it's there's a problem. They don't see it. And I even had an employee once that was a close friend of mine that my boss made me fire.
Oh, no.
And so I had to, now the person was not doing a good job. And we tried different things. But what happened was, is I would have a situation that I think would go wrong. And then I would do the postmortem. And then when I broke down what they missed, then they could see it. It's almost like people who are colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
There's that chart. Those who are colorblind can't see that number in there. But if you trace it around, then they can. And that's what I do as an executive coach. That blob of things there, let me trace this for you. And do you see that?
I know it's really difficult, Edward, to deal with people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To manage people.
Yeah.
A whole different skill set from whatever industry you're in.
Right.
We're in communications. It's one thing to know how to communicate and how to write a press release. It's another thing to, A, deal with your direct reports, who all have different levels of skill and all have personal problems and sometimes professional problems. And then, as the middle manager, manage up.
Right.
With your boss, who's looking at things maybe from the outside and just critical of everything you do.
In the middle management role, you become the interpreter. The boss has ideas, and some of the ideas are very broad in nature because they're a visionary.
Right.
The people below are more short-term people in terms of their planning horizon. I had a situation where I had a very creative boss. Ideas, excellent ideas. I mean, just great ideas. I couldn't think like more creative than he. But in terms of implementation, that wasn't his thing. He just thought it was a great idea. And so he'd come with these ideas about every month something grand that would take a year to implement. And I'm thinking, well, this is this year, it's September, and we've got to get through this year. And so he would always come up with these things. And once he was talking to my group, and he was talking about these grand plans, and it scared people to death. They thought, how are we going to do all that? They didn't know that I was giving them bite-sized pieces. And so what I told them, we got the big picture. We're going to get this done. Let me talk to my staff, because they're getting it done. They just don't know they're getting it done. I've got, this month we're doing this, and we're doing this, because their horizon is short. So I had to interpret his big ideas into bite-sized pieces. Then I had to say, I've got this plan. It's going to take us to this point to get here. I've got the other thing you've got. It's going to take us this amount of time to do it. I've got this one. It's going to take us this amount to do it. This fourth one, we don't have the capacity for. Which one do I need to let go of? And then he decided. And what he actually said is, you really know how to handle me.
Yeah, managing up is really tough. It's tough if you've got a really smart, creative boss like you had, but it's even tougher when you've got someone who's kind of clueless and has grand ideas but doesn't know that it's really not going to be possible, not with the staff level or with the current pool of talent that you have in the office. So it cuts both ways, but also it would be good to have someone come in that's from the outside and like a coach and say, no, we can do this, this, and this, but we can't do that, that, and that.
That's where a coach would come in. The thing I had with the one creative boss, and he was hard on people. I mean, it was really, sometimes he'd be actually very, very brutal. And so what we do is we had we call it a burnout award. Beat up old thing on a trophy stand. And there were days where it's like everything went wrong. No matter what you did, it wasn't going wrong. And so what we do is, and maybe one person got really chewed out. And so we bring that person in, and I used to drink a lot of Coca-Cola back then. So we'd have a Coke break, and we would just sit around, and that person who got it got the burnout award for the day. And what we said was, we lost today. Don't worry about doing anything else today, because, you know, whatever you're going to do, it's going to go downhill, so don't worry about it. The day's lost, but we're going to win tomorrow. And so that's what we would do. And so we pick people up with that one. And even with this boss we had, very demanding in his way, sometimes he'd get on me about stuff and sometimes he'd make a mistake. For me, I'd have one-on-ones with all of my staff every week, sometimes every other week. And that was, we were to him a task, but it was really relationship building. And it was building trust in those areas. And trust became the glue that worked it all out, because we had tense situations. We had successes. We had failures. We had things that didn't go well. But that trust is what really made it work. Now, when you talked about the boss that appears clueless, is also very, very afraid of failure. They put up the shield to protect themselves that they're really, really tough. But sometimes they don't. They know they're not. They know, will people find me out? That I'm really not as good as I appear to be. So there's a degree of fear and insecurity there. As strange as it sounds, so they're doing a defensive thing to protect themselves. It's almost like the Wizard of Oz. So when you understand that degree of vulnerability is there. Once you can get to that, and that goes through the trust process as well, but everybody's got a degree of insecurity and vulnerability, and sometimes you don't want people to know you have it.
You're right.
And so therefore, there has to be, as strange as it sounds, a degree of compassion for that leader. Once they recognize they have a problem, it's easier to deal with. And this is on a lower level. But I was dealing with these students who were very cocky males. I mean, they just thought, oh, they just had, and they had the world by the tail. And one day they came to the office, they closed the door, and they said, we're afraid. We show all this stuff, but we don't know that we're going to make it here. Our grades are not very good. We've had some run-ins with people that we probably shouldn't have had run-ins with, And I'm thinking, Mike, and I was just shocked. You know, I didn't want to, I mean, you guys? but that were students, but that's also in the leaders too. So they hide with being vibrato and all those other things. And you think, oh, they got it all together. But they will this thing work out? Will I make that budget? Will I get that whole thing like that? All that stuff is there. So it's what you're looking for is win-wins. And that boss who wants a successful organization, he or she wants it, but they're doing the opposite of what they need to be doing. You need to be pulling your team together, but you are turning them off. So the people who are supposed to support you are being absent. They're sabotaging you. They're not telling you the truth. You want success, but everything you're doing is the opposite of what you are.
What's the name of your book?
The name of the book is Office Politics the Right Way, the 7 principles for creating win-win relationships in the workplace.
And what does this tell us? This pretty much highlights what you've been talking about, how to deal with office politics.
It does. And in the 7 principles, we talk about the relationship with the boss, the relationship with colleagues, the relationship with subordinates. So all those relationships have a different dynamic. Mm-hmm. And so it discusses each of those separately.
Right.
And so that basically is the operational part of it. Then it talks about, in the second part of it, talks about the other, and that's dealing with diversity in the workplace. And what I say is that, you know, there's all the idea of maybe it could be racism, sexism, whatever it might be in the workplace. Maybe it's conscious, maybe it's unconscious. But what I say is look at talent. And it doesn't matter what form talent comes in. You need to look for talent. And it could come in any kind of body, any type of preference, whatever it might be. So it's the idea of looking at the value of diversity in the workplace, number one, for ethnicity or gender, whatever, but also of ideas. Because if you only look at one way of thinking, then you miss a whole nother market or potential group of people that you could serve or that would serve you. Right. So you got to look at diversity of thought and everything else. So that's dealing with the other. The other is dealing with what I call building political capital. And the way you do that is by being impeccable with your word, by doing what you say you're going to do, by not having the meeting after the meeting, by telling the truth in terms of doing what's best for the organization or the best way to get things done. That's the way to build political capital. There were people that I didn't particularly, maybe let's say a person had a totally different political perspective. And in fact, there was one guy like that. If there was one guy, if I had to go to battle and I say one person, it would be that guy.
Right.
Because I knew he'd always be on time, he'd always have his stuff together, and he'd tell me the truth. And those are the things that I think that help build political capital and being able to not just talk and have good ideas, but more importantly, to listen. Because there's nothing more hurtful than a person who feels they haven't been heard. So that's the way that I look at building political capital. The last point would be is what is the mission of the organization? People come together in an organization, not because they're friends, but there is one mission that that organization does. And everybody's there to help support that mission. But so often people forget about it. They get caught in petty squabbles and different things like that, and they forget. Why are we here? And when you know what the mission is and know what your role is in making it happen, you're purposeful and you're more about getting things done than about jockeying for position with someone else. When you look at it, there are things that you like to do well. And if what you do like to do well matches that mission, great match. If what you do doesn't meet that mission, do your best while you're there, but look for that place that serves your needs best and where you can serve best. Look beyond that organization. Your purpose and the organization's purpose should match. So I talk about mission-driven organization and individual.
And a lot of problems deal with the fact that the mission is not clear.
Yes.
They've updated their mission statement. that nobody knows what the mission is.
Right.
The mission is to serve our students or to communicate our story. That is forgotten in the day-to-day hustle and bustle of dealing with all the problems in the office sometimes.
And that's where you go. So therefore, if you don't know what your mission is, you start to do petty things. So therefore, mission statement should be, I think, two or three lines with maybe two or three key words that say what you do. A lot of times when people write mission statement, they get every department involved, and every department wants a little piece of them in the mission statement.
Right.
And so by the time you get done, it's what they say is a camel is a horse put together by a committee. By the time you get it done, it doesn't look like a horse anymore. What you do is there may be key words that people say, I don't know the exact wording of this mission statement, but I know we deal with providing great communication for the university, that we serve a population that does this, whatever it might be. But if it's communication, then who do you serve and why do you serve them? And so therefore the mission statement can be just something along that line. You said the key words are communication, service, the population we serve for the greater Sacramento area. And so anybody could look at that and say, we provide the best communication for the Sacramento area. That's what we're all about. How do I contribute to that mission versus a paragraph?
Edward, just wonderful tips and information.
The name of my company is Podestiny Coaching, and it can be found on LinkedIn. Well, my website is www.podestinycoaching.com. And that's where you can find most of my information. And the one thing I'd say is that a lot of people that I talk with, they know somebody who has an office politics situation, who has a boss that can use some help. It's never them. It's always, I know this person, you need to talk to that person. So if people know people who might benefit to relieve some of that stress, to have a better workplace, to have a win-win operation, I'm available.
Great. Thank you so much. Great talking to you. Great seeing you. The top of 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 the top of